Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Dynamic growth, balanced income, select growth and income. The 401k solution, disciplined equity. These are the KPP Financial investment programs designed to meet your goals and life situations. See more about them on investtalk.com. Click on the Investments tab. End of commercial, and now today's Invest Talk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. And, of course, Invest Talk is open to discuss your money. That's what we're here for, how to make it, how to grow it, how to save it, those kinds of things. And we welcome you as part of the conversation. It's not just me. I can talk about this stuff because I love it. I bore my wife every time I start talking about it. She just turns me off. So you have to listen to me out there. But if you want to talk about something else, you're going to have to call. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. You can call me anytime. You can ask me anything you want financial. You can send me an email note by going to contact Steve or contact Justin at investtalk.com. And it's Friday, so usually on Friday I try to share a little bit of the premium newsletter I send out every Friday morning, 40 before noon or so. I offer some perspective on the market moves and where is that relationship to the year-to-date performance, that kind of thing. A couple stock ideas in there. There's a couple of big blue-chipper kind of stocks that we said you might want to have on your watch list. In the portfolio management section, I talk about the overall risk of your portfolio, which you know I talk about a lot. And I talk about political risks, exchange rate risks, and mostly about ADRs, American Depository Receipts, foreign companies that trade on our exchanges, and what the risks are concerning those. And on the Consumer Watch, you know, I talked about, you know, just the useful consumer suggestions that you might be interested in. This $9.99 a month for the weekly newsletter, if you're ever interested and you want to order it, comes into your email box. You can sign up now by going to investtalk.com. Now, we believe that every investor should expect better than average results from their investments. Accurate information, a balanced perspective, how to protect yourself in down markets, how to grow in up markets. You know, even in up markets, there's times you need to protect yourself because the stock market goes in two directions. It has a bias to the upside over long term, but you just got to be aware of how and what drives stock prices. What's driving that? Do you have any idea of what that might be? Do you have questions about it? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, this is Tim. I listen to the podcast, and I live in Texas. I'm wondering if you have advice on how to find someone to help manage a portfolio. I'm just starting investing, and I don't have anyone helping me, and it wouldn't be very easy to come meet out in California. So how do I find someone locally in Texas? What are your recommendations? Thank you.
There's someone everywhere. I would, it's difficult to find a good, solid, someone you can trust. And that always is a problem, always an issue. But if you want some help, I can still do it long distance. If you send me your portfolio and set up a time to talk about what you want to do and how you want to grow it, I'll be happy to help you with it. But to find someone local, you just, make sure you go through, take a look at their SEC, their ADV filings with the SEC, check the Better Business Bureau, make sure that they're okay, and determine how they get paid. Because you don't want to deal with somebody who gets paid by them selling you high commission products, mutual funds and annuities. Those are very high commission things, and so they'll have a bias on that. So be very, very careful. There's no easy way. I think the best way is, talking to friends or relatives and see if they have someone they trust that they use. I get a number of clients that way. So I think that's a good way to do it. Okay? And good luck. It's not easy. But if you want some help, I'd be happy to help you. you know, with this day and age, with Skype and emails and, you know, sending back attachments, it's pretty easy to help you long distance these days. The technology is so good, but that's up to you. My number is 800-557-5461 at the office if you want to give me a call, or you can just send me an email. Go on to investtalk.com, click on Contact Steve. So there are 1,500 ETFs available on the marketplace. So how do you make a smart choice? How do you figure which one? Three key questions you should ask every time you're considering an ETF. It's one of our main talking points today. Why 401ks are not working? Why 401ks, IRAs, not just the 401ks, but IRAs too, why they're not working? It's pretty simple, but we'll talk about that. And something a little lighter, do you guys have apps on your cell phone for shopping, for coupons? If you don't, you're losing out on a lot of savings. Shopping apps you can use to save money. My wife uses one that, excuse me, I think that's it's an up and coming. Remember the coupons you used to clip out of the newspapers? Those are going away like the dodo birds. And they're not gone, but more and more discounts are on your cell phone and shopping apps. So we're going to discuss that. There's one in particular that aggregates a bunch of store apps. Might be something you'd be interested in. It's an award-winning tool that we'll make available free to all our listeners. It's an important risk analysis tool. We have it there on our website for you to look at investtalk.com. Just click on a series of questions and you'll assign a risk tolerance number to yourself. Then you take that number and you know that number, that's your risk number, between 0 and 99. And if it's around 80, that's the risk of the S&P 500. So you know that that's the risk that you can tolerate. And if you give us your portfolio, we'll put it into the other side of that software and we'll match up your portfolio and see what that number comes up with, see what that risk number. It takes just only a couple of minutes. It's there on the blue box on investtalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, you can get a hold of us right now. We're going to go to Maria in San Francisco. Hi, Maria.
Oh, hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, you making it makes the show.
No, you really have a wonderful show. Okay, question about your international fund.
Yes.
I always wanted to buy some international ETF.
Okay.
I always could not get in because, okay, for example, I'm looking at India, I'm looking at Mexico, I'm looking at Australia, okay?
Okay.
Those funds, you see price moving up and move down. Okay, sometimes you could bought at the resistance or, you know, you could sell at the, you bought at the...
support.
Right, the floor, and then you sell at resistance.
Correct.
But you just don't know what people are selling or buying for America, we can hear our news, we can see what is the economy going on. But for international, especially for individual investors, how can you track all the news?
It's very difficult. Maria, you hit it right on the head as far as the difficulty.
Right. There is no price target. There are some, like a 10 largest holding, just say India, okay?
Yes.
You could see the top one or two stocks, there could be some kind of a price target. But other than that, that's just like a 5%. So how can you figure out when to get in and when to get out? And they are very volatile.
They are very volatile.
So what do I do?
Okay. Very, very good question, Maria. Very good question. Because they can get very volatile. And if you buy a foreign stock and you want to sell it, you got the foreign exchange rate to deal with. In other words, you may have gone up and their money and their stock exchange, that stock may have gone up. But by the time you transferred into your money here, our dollar may have gone down or gone up. It changes the whole, so it gets even more complex than Maria's talking about. Now, are you familiar with ADRs, Maria?
Yes.
Okay. There are American depository receipts that are stocks that are foreign but traded here in the United States. And I won't go into all the details of how that works. But what it means, if a stock that is foreign that wants to trade on our exchanges here, they have to comply with the general accounting principles that we, our own country, our own companies have to comply with. And so what that does is it gives you more transparency to see what they're doing, okay? They still can lie and cheat and everything else, though. But so can our own companies. As we know, they do that, too. So, unfortunately. But American depository receipts is a good way to invest in foreign companies, because then you can start putting on the same kind of growth and GP and earnings yield requirements you have. But again, you're right, Maria. When you're investing in a foreign country, how do you know if that country is not doing something crazy like Russia when they took over that oil company, Yukos? Something crazy that would never happen in our country. You never know. So there's an inherent built-in risk investing in foreign companies. And that's why it's a good idea to find a good mutual fund who does it for a living. You know, you can buy, if you have you want 10% foreign exposure in your portfolio, it's almost better to buy a mutual fund that specializes.
Great, great.
You know, because then you allegedly, quote unquote, are hired an expert to invest in those foreign companies.
Very good idea.
888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. How about Leon in San Mateo? Hi, Leon, how you doing?
I've been listening to you guys' show for maybe about a week now.
Okay.
And I'm not an investor at all.
Okay.
But I've always wanted to get in. I have no clue at all on what process it takes to get into doing something like this. I don't have a whole lot of money, but still, I would really like to get into the market and keep learning more from your program as well as other things I see on the internet.
Okay, Leon, you know, it's a great question. And just by the fact that you're listening and have the interest, you will be able to do this. It's not rocket science. I keep telling people, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to have the interest.
Yeah.
And yes, everybody started from somewhere. You just don't wake up in the morning and therefore you know everything. No one. Leon, I learn stuff all the time, and I've been doing this for years. Now, if I can, let me give you a couple of suggestions, you know, if you're just starting out. First of all, don't buy just one stock. That's
okay.
Not a good way to start. I would suggest if you are going to start buying stuff, you either buy mutual funds or what's called exchange-traded funds, ETFs.
Okay.
Which are like mutual funds, but they buy and sell like stocks. And they're baskets of stocks, ETFs. Go to E-Trade, the ETF center on eTrade.com, and they'll tell you and describe the ETFs. And, you know, you can have an ETF of like an oil sector. You can have ETF in a country, you know, like China. You can have an ETF in biotech. So it gives you some more diversification, but you don't have a lot of money. You can buy just a few shares if you want.
Oh, okay.
Now, that will get you into the game a little bit, to play a little bit, but I would suggest that you read first and read some of the basic books. Peter Lynch is a very easy book. Peter Lynch, Beating the Street. I would strongly suggest that book. That book is 200 pages, okay? Very easy to read.
Oh, okay.
Beating the Street is an older book, but it's still in print. Or One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. Also, I would suggest that you come to our conference. And we are all about teaching. These are teaching conferences. That's all they're all about. And if you have an interest and you want to get into a newsletter, we put out a newsletter. And the second section, we have four sections. It comes out every week. The second section is how to manage a portfolio of stocks, how to do it.
Okay.
Might be something you're interested in. Go to investtalk.com. You can sign up for there. Comes out every Friday.
Oh, okay.
You know, just by the fact that you are interested, you will learn how to do this.
Okay.
Leon, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Okay, we're going to go to Jim in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Jim?
Thanks for taking the call.
I appreciate you making it.
Hey, I have a quick question for you regarding Roth IRAs. When one invests in a Roth IRA and you make trades, you create capital gains and losses, what happens with the short-term versus long-term capital gains? Since they're not taxed, is that not a consideration at all?
Not a consideration at all.
Okay, so that is the advantage over just a regular brokerage account.
In a Roth and a regular IRA, you don't care about short-term, long-term capital gains. You don't care about any of that. You trade whatever you want to do because there's no tax on it.
Excellent.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk, made possible by our firm, my firm, and Justin's firm, KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Bill in San Francisco. How are you doing, Bill?
I've heard you talk about annuities. I ran across a new one, which I've never heard of before. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I'm not, so I'd like to get your pros and cons on it, please.
Okay.
That's what equity index annuity.
Think about what they're doing. An equity index annuity, everybody, is an annuity. It's an insurance product in which they take your money that you invest and they invest it in an index. Now, they usually tell you which index. It will be the S&P 500, or did they specify?
Yeah, there's different ones. I think one they use as an example is S&P 500.
Yeah, that's one of the most popular ones. Okay, so what they do is they take the money, and they give you an equity index annuity, and they also guarantee a return, usually 3 to 5%. I don't know what this one did, Bill, but they usually do guarantee a return. The problem you have with this is that annuities charge anywhere from 2 to 3% annual cost. What are they doing with that annuity? They're buying an index with it. They know that the index over a long period of time, and remember, they're tying you up in an annuity for 7 years or 10 years, depending on the length of the annuity. So they know over that period of time, the index will return approximately 10% annually. So they know, because they're smart people, their odds are with them. The probabilities are with them that they'll get 10% of return. So they guarantee you 3 without too much trouble. And then they can charge high fees for holding the annuity for you. So they make lots of money on the fees, therefore reducing your ultimate gain because you've got to pay the fees out of the return you're getting. It's a very good deal for the insurance company. They love these.
Well, the way they pitched it to me was that if you make money, they take a piece of the action and you get money. But if the index goes down, you don't lose from that. They then index you down the next year at the lower rate, but you still have the same amount of money as before.
That's right. Then this one is promising you. Remember I told you they always promise you a return. This one is just promising you'll never go down.
Right.
That's not as good as others I've heard. Others I've heard, they promise you at least a small return every year. Don't think this is something great for you. It's not.
Do they still have the mortality rates and the all the other fees in there?
Not usually. Again, these are very complex insurance contracts. They're hard to understand. Trust me. I've read them. I used to be in the insurance business. They're very difficult. I'll tell you this. In general, the person who's making the most money is the insurance company. I don't want to say that you won't do well. You can do well, but you can do better if you take the same amount of money and put it in an equity index yourself and then take some of that money and maybe buy a CD with it and spread the risk around or something, and you'll do better. They just give you that comfort of knowing they guarantee that you will never lose. Everybody loves that word, guarantee. Good luck, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. How you doing, Manuel?
I love you guys' show. I've been listening for about 3 months, and I learned a lot of good stuff. My question for you today was, the company I work for matches us in our 401k with their own stock, and they're telling me that the stock's going to split. You know, I know then you end up with twice as many shares, but why does it split is my question.
Okay, good question, Manuel. I bet you there's a lot of people out there that want to know why it does that. Why does a company split? Do you know if it's going to split 2-for-1?
I'm not sure. Somebody, one of the other guys that's always paying attention to 401k a lot more than I do will tell me that today.
Well, just to let you know that a most common split is 2 stocks for 1, but they don't do that all the time. Sometimes it's 3-for-2 or 5-for-3. You can do different ones. But most common is 2-for-1, so we'll try to stick with that. So what's happening is you had one share before at, let's say it was $50 a share. Then you're going to have two shares at $25 a share. So you didn't really increase the value of your holdings at all. Splits do not increase the value of anything. They just give you more shares. Now, why would they do that? One of the main reasons they do that, Manuel, is to lower the price of the stock to make it more attractive for more people to buy. Think about this. What if the stock price was $1,500 per share? How many people would be able to buy 100 shares? or
right,
50
no,
shares.
Not too many.
That's right. So they keep splitting. Microsoft did this all throughout all its history when it first started. Split two for one. So did Qualcomm. Qualcomm, which is a huge San Diego stock.
Actually, I owned Qualcomm before it split, so I have.
You can see if it never split, the price would be so high that not too many people would buy it. The most common reason, Manuel, is that they wanted to lower the price to be more attractive to more people. The second reason they do it, is to get more liquidity. In other words, if they split it two for one, they have twice as many shares out there to trade. More liquid. More people can buy and sell. Same, it's related to the first reason, but that's the only reason why they split the shares.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Well, that answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, Manuel. Appreciate the call. Jamie, San Diego, how you doing?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Steve, you oftentimes talk about a chart that is a triple top, double top, and
yes,
so
ma'am.
On and so forth.
Yeah.
What period of time do you go look at it? 3 years, nine months?
Very good question, Jamie. Very good. And these are the kind of questions where I can go in more detail and show you in our conferences that we have, because it's a very good question. You first start with, Jamie, a one-year daily chart. In other words, it's a daily chart of the stock price over 1 year period.
Okay.
That's where you look for double and triple tops in the last 12 months. If the stock chart's not really telling you much, you can go back now to 3 years.
Okay.
But usually in that one-year period, it tells you a story.
All right.
Okay, but we generally look at daily charts. I usually go back to, I go to a, what's called a weekly chart, and that goes back about 4 years.
Okay.
So I do that just to get a feel for what's really happening. Is this stock continuing to move up? Has it been here 2 years ago at this price and just can't seem to move from it? That kind of thing is what you're looking at.
All right.
Okay, Jamie?
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. You listen to Invest Talk coming up on the next half hour. What do you know that can hurt you? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. I mean, what you don't know can hurt you. 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Steve in San Jose. How are you doing, Steve?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. My question is about stop losses. Or more specifically, trailing stops.
Okay.
Can you tell me a little about how they work? What I'm concerned about losing some of my gains here if the market doesn't hold up.
Well, it depends on your brokerage firm whether they let you put stop losses in and what kind of stop loss that they'll let you put in. But if you're, if you're trying to put in a stop loss, you have to decide how you want it to trigger. A trailing stop loss. Do you want it to trigger when the stock pulls down a certain number of points to a certain level? Do you want it to trigger when it pulls down a certain percentage? Do you want it to trigger when it pulls below a moving average? So you have to first figure out how you want to place it. Almost all of the stop losses that are allowed through brokerage firms, through individuals like yourself, you have to put a price in. I want the stop loss to go in at $32.12. If it drops below that, I wanna automatically be pulled out. So what you have to do is you have to look at it and reset it every so often, because as the stock moves up, remember it's a trailing stop loss. You want to keep moving that stop loss up. Okay.
Right.
So you put
the way it was explained to me is I could pick a percentage, let's say 7%, off of the closing high of each day, and it would automatically reset to whatever that new high was.
Well, that's pretty nice, because many brokerage firms won't let you do that. And so now you have to decide what percentage you want to use. Okay. Remember, each individual stock moves independently. So some stocks are very violent or very volatile, and some hardly move at all. So the ones that hardly move at all, you won't want to put 7%. That's too much. Okay. If for stocks that are very, very, they're very, lots of volatility, 7%, 8%, 9%, even 10% could be okay. You know, so you have to really kind of study your particular stock and see what it, see how it moves, and then put your trailing stop loss. So as soon as the market, as soon as the price hits your stop loss, okay, it will trigger a sale. Doesn't necessarily mean, Steve, that you'll get that exact price, but they'll get it as close as possible usually.
Terrific. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, liquidity of the stock. If it's a very illiquid, you might get a bad fill. Let's go to Gene in North Carolina. Listen to us on podcast. Hi, Gene. How you doing, Gene?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had a question about the jobs report and the labor participation rate you mentioned.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you mentioned that it went up slightly, the participation rate.
Yes.
I guess compared to last month.
Yes.
And in general, you know, I hear people say that part of why the labor participation rate is high is because of people retiring.
Yes, that's part of the reason. Yes, I would have to agree with that. Part of the reason is, as you get older, but see, the labor participation rate only counts ages from, like, I don't remember exactly, like 22 to 65. Yeah. So
what I was wondering. Yeah, if they broke it out so that they would just do a separate participation rate for people who are not retiring because of age.
Yeah. So it tries to do that, and of course it's imperfect, right? We know that, you know, Gene, these things are always imperfect. But because who's to say that retiring at 65 is what the baby boomers will be doing? Some of them retire earlier, some retire later. So, but they try to use the same gauge as much as possible. Another little bit misleading is that this one of the reasons why it's so low is not only because the baby boomers are getting retiring, it is because it's just not a perfect reading. I like it better than the 4.9% they report every month, because you know how they come up with that number? They call up the households. They call up, they do a survey. Not a lot. We're only talking a few thousand. That's all they call up every month. Are you working? Yes, no. Oh, okay, there's unemployment rate. To me, that's just terrible. So don't think any of these numbers, Gene, are very good. They're just,
you know, you're an employer, is that correct?
Yes.
Yourself?
Uh-huh.
So did you ever participate in in the survey of the BLS?
They've never asked me. I've never seen it. Over all the years I've been self-employed and had employees, I've never been asked, ever.
I have an S-Corp with just myself, and for several years I participated because they sent me postcards saying that either I have to fill out something online every month or they'll call me every month. And for an S-Corp, I guess you know how many employees I have. They have three questions they ask me every month. They asked me how many employees, how many employees are those or women, and how much was your total salary did you pay out?
I have an S corp, and I've never gotten those questions asked me.
Yeah.
I'm not very comfortable with the methodology. I use it and I report it. I just always take it with a grain of salt.
Do you have time for one quick question about this?
I'm sorry, Gene. I got to go to the next caller. I really appreciate it, though. Thank you very much.
You got it. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Let's go to Manu in Fremont. How you doing, Manu?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a general question. I was trying to ask you for many months anyways. You know, I don't do day trade, but let's say I work. I work now. If I don't work, so what is the tax rate at that time, if it's a long term or short term? Because right now it's based on your income, right? But let's say you don't work.
Uh-huh.
How they figure it out?
Okay.
How much tax? Let's say I buy a stock and have it for less than a year, 9 months.
Uh-huh.
How it works?
Okay. You're talking apples and oranges here. When you work, you're working for an income. That's an active income. So you're actually working for an income, and that's an income tax rate that you're charged. The capital gains rate when you buy and sell stocks is a separate tax on your capital gains and losses. Okay? So you don't add them together. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you figure them separately. So your capital gains and losses are figured on short-term versus long-term. Okay. Now, if you have short term, the capital gains under 12 months are taxed at your income tax rate, but it's still a separate tax.
That's why I called.
Yeah, it's still a separate rate, though, a separate tax, okay? So it depends on what rate you are of the income of the what you're working that year. If you have a lot of income, your short-term capital gains tax will be higher. If you have hardly any earned income... It will be lower.
My question is, if I don't work, I don't want to work, because I don't need the working income, then how it will work?
Then you're, I see. So if you have no income, what's your tax rate?
I want to leave a job. Yeah, that's what I want to leave a job and then want to figure out how much my tax will be, because that will come only from stock.
Okay. That's a legitimate question, and I'm not sure I have the answer to that. You might have to call up an accountant for that. And if anybody knows the answer, please give me a call. Because I, you know...
Yeah, if I'm working, then I don't have any issue. But if I don't work, then there is no income tax.
Yep, no income tax. So then what is your tax rate on short-term capital gains? And I guarantee you there's a base rate. I guarantee it. I just don't know what it is. Manu, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yeah, taxes is not my strong point, everybody. I just kind of, you know, I deal with them like you do when tax time comes around. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. But I would like to know that answer. I think that would be a good answer to know. Are you satisfied with your current retirement portfolio? Do you worry that you may be taking too much risk in it with the stock market? Maybe it's time for a review, comprehensive review. One of the services I provide to a limited number of people, listeners, is a free checkup. Take a look at it. I will be in San Ramon next week, March 9th. To save your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting with Steve. Appreciate it.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
We're going to go to John of Fremont. How you doing, John?
Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Good. Hey, so I got I wouldn't call it a dilemma, but so I am currently in the plumbers union, and I've been in it for 15 years or so. I collect and I have a pension. Now I'm being faced. I'm getting into management now, and I'm being presented with the opportunity to go salary. And what that does is it. You know, it saves the company from having to pay the extra package for my benefits, my pension, et cetera. And that's a substantial amount. So, so what I have also is I have a 401A as an Apple.
Right.
Which I do $10 an hour. I put into that to limit my tax liability. And
right.
The problem with that is I'm not able to manage it. Basically, I get a statement once a year.
The union manages it, right?
Yeah, So, you know, and the company that I work for, they have a 401k, they have health benefits and everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to make sure that I'm making the right move.
That's tough, John.
So if I. You know, so if I do make the move, I'll have their 401k. Is there any other options that I should look into? I also have some IRAs that I put money towards every year.
You'll lose the 401A. You can't contribute to that anymore. Now you'll have a 401k that you start to contribute, and of course. I don't know. Do you know how much you're putting in a year in your 401A? You said $10 an hour, but how much that equal in a year? Do you know?
So it's $350 a week.
Okay.
$350, $1,400.
$1,400
a month. Yeah.
Okay. So that's what, $15,000 or so? And a 401k, you can put up to $18,000. How old are you? How old are you?
I'm 40 years old.
Okay, so you're not old enough for the catch-up, which means you could put another $66,000 in per year, making $24,000, and that won't happen until you're 50. So at your age, it's $18,000 is how much you can put away in your 401k if you want to. Do they have a matching? Do they match any money in your 401k?
They do. So they match up to 3%.
Okay, up to 3% of your salary, so you're getting some free money. So if you put 3%, will they put 3% in?
Yeah. Okay. They'll match up to 3%.
Okay. Then if you put in 5%, they're still going to put in 3. That's the maximum, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So on that benefit, you're getting free money there, and you have to decide, is it worth the extra salary? And it's a tough one when you go from being an independent worker and to an employee of a company. I have a couple of relatives that had this quandary because some of them saying, well, I make even a little bit less becoming management. But then again, you might get better salary increases too, you know, so.
It'll be probably another $30,000 a year that I'll get on top of my yearly. Right. So it's a substantial amount that I'll be taking home.
So it sounds like I don't see how you can pass it up. Actually, you got to take that $30,000. Yeah.
Now is that $18,000 a year? Is that just for the 401k? And then I can how much can I put towards my IRAs?
If you put in 18K, you can't put any more anything to a regular IRA. You can't.
Okay.
I'm not sure about a Roth though, and I have to ask an accountant about that, because you know Roth is after tax dollars, but I'm not sure.
Right.
I that I don't have the answer for. So the total limit would be 18K. You can't put 18K there and then put another 6,000 in a regular IRA. They won't allow you to do that.
Okay. I misunderstood. It was my understanding that maybe it was a Roth that you could put in each account up to 18K, but apparently not.
No, you cannot. No. But talk to your accountant when you do your taxes. Have you done your taxes yet?
Yeah, we're in the process of it.
Okay, well, when you get your taxes, ask him. He should know. They should know.
Okay.
That's what they do for a living. I'm sorry I couldn't help you that much with that, John. Appreciate the call, though. Thank you very much. 888-99-CHART. Why aren't 401ks and IRAs, why are they not working? That's going to be one of our talking points, one I want to get to. And mostly because people aren't using them. That's mostly, but that's not the entire answer. But that's part of the problem. In 2013, the average 401k IRA was $95,000. In 2001, it was $91,000. It went from $91,000 to $95,000 in 12 years. 50% of the working age families have no money in retirement. 50%. And I've seen this in real life, by the way, going and talking to people about signing up for their 401k or the small employer, and employees don't want to do it, even when the employer was matching some of the money because they wanted all the money. It is difficult for low-income families to give up some savings, but boy, you're going to shoot yourself in the future. Our InvestTalk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I'm here to answer any questions you might have. 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Marie in Snow Valley. How you doing, Marie?
My husband and I are 88 years old, and my daughter is helping us decide what to do with an IRA. We have about $200,000, and it was called from a bond, and it's needs to be invested.
Okay.
Are we too old to think of a balanced fund or a bond fund, or should we just go to cash?
Well, you're 88. God bless you for that. How's your health?
Fine.
Are you financially set? Do you have any worries about money other than this money?
We just need this money to pay insurance policies.
Normally at 88 years old, I would say don't put it in anything long term.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have your health, Marie, go take a trip around the world. I'm thinking if you're financially set, you know, you saved and worked and scrimped for this money all your life, and it's time to enjoy it.
Well,
I don't know. If it was me, and I'm 88 years old, and I have lots of money, and this is money I just need for insurance payments, and how much is that a year, by the way?
Well, the one we have to pay is $8,000.
Eight? Mm-hmm. So at $8,000 a year, if you made absolutely nothing on this $200,000, you got 20-plus years. Of money. And God bless you, I don't think you're going to make it up to 108.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay. What you could do, do you have one child, daughter?
I have two daughters.
Have you been giving them gifts of up to $10,000 a year to transfer the wealth without a tax consequence?
Well, our other money's all in property, and we can't because of capital gains yet.
That's right. You got issues there. I would keep it liquid. I do a CD or treasury. I do ladder treasuries or CDs. I would not get involved with the stock market at 88.
Okay.
And that's just me. If you have plenty of money, sure. If it's fun and something you want to do, sure. But otherwise, I'd probably keep it very safe, Marie.
I just want to be sure I make that $8,000.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Okay, let's talk about three key questions to answer when you're considering to buy an ETF. And they're not a difficult question. First of all, what is the underlying index the ETF is following? And now some ETFs are following different parts of the market. But generally, most of them follow some kind of index. And you have to just understand what it is that you're following, what it is following. Okay? So is it the stocks that you want? The next, and that's really the most important question. Next is, well, how much does it cost? What are the fees involved in here? Now, all ETFs has an expense ratio. Okay, all of them. But some ETFs are more than others. And, you know, if you're just following an index, the expense ratio should be very, very low. But you need to find out how much and compare the different ETFs. If an ETF is S&P, checking the S&P 500, and there's 10 of those out there somewhere, why would you not go with the cheapest one? The third thing you need to consider yourself is liquidity. Some of the ETFs are pretty exotic. And it may be difficult. They may not be as liquid. I'll give you an example. Remember the run we had on junk bonds a couple of months ago? A really bad run. And one of the funds out there stopped refunds. People wanting their money out, wanting to get out. And that was a mutual fund. In other words, what happened is that then made even the ETF illiquid. That follow the same junk bond. So you got to figure out, you know, make sure it's very liquid. You want a liquid ETF so that you, when you want to get out, you can get out. When everybody's trying to stampede for the door, you got a problem. Because everybody's stampeding, everybody can't get out the door. Same way with a stock, by the way. Same thing. Shopping apps. Shopping. Going out shopping. You can save a lot of money if you use shopping apps on your cell phone. Amazon, Walmart, Target, all the big, my wife uses Michaels. It's an app on her phone, and she checks it if she goes to Michaels and see if there's any discounts. And there they are, shopping apps. Now, if you don't want to buy the individual, not buy, but actually download the individual applications, you can use ShopKick. ShopKick, S-H-O-P-K-I-C-K. It aggregates different coupons from a lot of different stores. I mean, last year, 49% of all coupons were digital on smartphones. Almost half the coupons that are now are on your digital phones that were used. And 25% were used by 50 people 55 years or older. So it's a big thing, and it's just going to get bigger. Our time is up. A reminder that if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can send me a note by going to investtalk.com and clicking on Contact Steve. That's an email that comes directly to me. I'm Justin Klein. I'm Steve Peasley with Justin Klein. I mean, not here with me today, but for Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP Financial, which is a registered investment advisor firm, I want to thank you for listening today, and let's do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.